thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am your host. I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Today's podcast is the final episode of a three-part set on American poverty. So without further ado, let's jump right in. In the first episode, I evaluated some of the key definitions and standards that are used when measuring poverty. In the second episode, I outlined the public debate on this issue. Today, I will offer some of my own thoughts and opinions on the topic. This is no doubt a complicated issue, and there are a lot of factors at play. The sources we use, the standards we use, our biases and presuppositions, our wants and desires, and our backgrounds and personal experiences all play a role here. I do believe that all things considered, when you put it all together in terms of income, consumption, opportunity, the resources that are at one's disposal, and access to the most simple and basic necessities of life, the vast majority of Americans have it much better than most of our counterparts throughout the globe, and certainly most of our counterparts throughout human history. I truly think that personal experience, firsthand accounts, and direct eyewitness testimony all across the globe and throughout history confirm this claim again and again. If I am poor or homeless in the United States and I'm thirsty, I can go to a local park or a mall and fill up my water bottle at a water fountain. Or I can go to a Starbucks and ask for a free water. If I'm hungry, I can go to three different food banks or soup kitchens in my town and get up to three different hot meals in a day. If I need a place to sleep, I can go to the local mission and get free shelter for the night. Much of this comes at the hands of Christians, by the way. But I know that this can be done and is done on a regular basis across the United States because I see it take place in Colorado Springs, the city I currently live in, every single day. I know these charities by name. I know what they provide on a daily basis. I know the kind of people who work there. I know this because I've worked hand in hand with many of these organizations since coming to this city about 8 years ago. I also know, both from my personal experience and from the experiences of others, that many people across the globe and throughout history can and could only dream of such opportunities. There are people today who are literally starving to death, or who don't have the privilege of drinking clean water. This is because their countries don't provide them with such opportunities and privileges. Of course, this is not to say anything about the numerous food pantries, clothing distribution centers, thrift stores, welfare programs, affordable housing opportunities, and other special services that are provided by both the church and the government for the marginalized and underprivileged in the United States. I don't say this to in any way understate or diminish the plight of the homeless and the impoverished in this country. Homelessness in particular is a very complicated and difficult subject. If I didn't care about the plight of the poor and needy, or I didn't think that their situation was worth my attention, then I wouldn't have devoted time and energy to helping the downtrodden throughout my adult life. And yet, I still know that I haven't done nearly enough, or nearly as much as I could. As a theologian, I certainly don't have to be reminded of all the passages in Scripture that speak of the immense importance, the profound responsibility of caring for the marginalized. In fact, one of the main reasons why Yahweh judges the Israelites in the Old Testament is because of their neglect of the poor and needy in their society. God called Israel, and He calls us today to promote justice and mercy in community with others. But this actually speaks directly to my main motivation for producing this three-part set on American poverty. The point of these podcasts is not to discourage generosity, but to encourage generosity. It's not to devalue the underprivileged, but to demonstrate their incredible value in the eyes of God, as beloved children of the Most High who are made in His very image and should be treated as such. I didn't make these podcasts to curtail kindness, but to inspire kindness. I created these podcasts on American poverty because I think the practical implications are incredibly important, both for personal virtue and for personal ethics. Like our old friend George Bailey, as he stood on that bridge overlooking the water underneath, many young people in our country today have lost hope, falling into fatalism, defeatism, and despair. Not unlike George, I think part of this is because the younger generations tend to have an exaggerated or overstated understanding of how bad their plight or their lot in life is. Many young people have accepted the not-so-innocent lie that things can't get any worse, or that there aren't many others in the world who have it worse. But neither of these propositions are true, and neither of them are helpful either. Like with George Bailey, this pessimistic outlook on life and cynical perspective on citizenship in the United States robs Americans of contentment, fulfillment, joy, gratitude, and thankfulness. It robs us of the happiness that we are all pursuing. And in some cases, not dissimilar to George Bailey's experience, it can rob us of life itself, as suicide has become a viable option for many young people today. And it's often a result of fatalism, defeatism, and hopelessness, which can far too easily sprout up when we possess an overly negative and exaggerated understanding of our plight or our lot in life. But even if one is unable to ultimately bring themselves to the last resort contemplated by George Bailey, pessimistic and hyperbolic views of life in 21st century America can create stagnation and inactivity. Fatalism and defeatism naturally breed these results. Like with George, if I feel like I'm in an impossible situation with no hope in sight, then I may very well just walk away and give up the fight. If I believe that the only solution to the problem lies outside of my control, that the only solution to my problem is found in the hands of legislators, that the only solution for young Americans is for their country to completely overhaul and change how they do things, then what motivation do I have to actively work for my good and to actively strive for my betterment and my personal well-being right now? Regardless of my personal economic views, I should strive to use the system that is currently in place, despite how imperfect and flawed that system might be, to my advantage and for my benefit. Regardless of how imperfect America's economic system is, opportunities do indeed abound, and people should try to take full advantage of those opportunities. Instead of focusing so much on the opportunities that you don't have, as an American citizen, look at all the opportunities that you do have. If In-N-Out offers us a job to flip burgers for $20 an hour, we shouldn't scoff at it. If our job at Amazon offers free education at over 100 different colleges and universities, we should take advantage of it. If our employer offers us a competitive benefits package, we should be thankful. If the school we teach at provides student loan forgiveness, we should have a sense of gratitude. Most people around the world don't get these types of opportunities. There are people all across the globe who would literally give an arm and a leg for some of these privileges. Listen, I can complain and whine and play the woe is me game with the best of them. I mentioned in the first episode that I've lived half of my adult life right around the established poverty line in the United States. I've consistently worked some of the most difficult jobs that this country has to offer, mainly as a dishwasher and a line cook, working mostly kitchen jobs until somewhat recently. If you've never worked in a busy kitchen, let me tell you, it's something. These jobs are notoriously challenging. If you're cooking at a busy restaurant, you're usually working in an extremely heated, both figuratively and literally, and stressful environment. You're often being treated like trash by both management and many of the servers who are waiting on you and barking at you for their orders. And it's not uncommon to have to multitask maybe 30 different things at once in this dehumanizing environment they call a kitchen. On top of all of that, you're paid like crap. Even considering inflation, I was personally paid much worse in my late 20s and early 30s than what kids are making today at the In-N-Out down the road from me. Yes, I can complain and whine with the best of them. I've never been offered free education. I've never been offered a competitive benefits package. I never received substantial scholarships in college or graduate school, despite being a near 4.0 student. Until very recently, I've never been compensated well. And in all honesty, I've never really felt valued by others. When I say I can play the woe is me game, I mean it. But the point of this three-part podcast wasn't for me to whine and complain to you like a baby over my employment struggles, academic hardships, and financial difficulties. It's certainly not to try to argue that I've had it worse in every way than so many others in our country who whine and complain about the same things. I honestly don't know. But I shouldn't make comparisons anyway, as I tend to think that the tendency to compare ourselves with others is part of the problem here. Especially since we usually only compare ourselves with those who have it better than us, not with all those who have it so much worse. The point of this podcast isn't to highlight my few misfortunes, but actually my many blessings. It isn't to underscore what I don't have, but all that I do have. Though as an individual, I've lived about half of my adult life at the poverty line in the United States, I've been blessed with an amazing wife who helped support me through school and has helped cover for my lack of financial success, allowing me to live a comfortable life. I can also mention the fact that I've been blessed to have had co-signers for my student loans, which enabled me to pursue my education, without which I wouldn't be able to do this podcast or write for the organization that I currently create content for. I wouldn't be able to do what I love. See, there are two perspectives that we can take, and there are two ways in life that we can go. We can take the glass half empty approach, or we can take the glass half full approach. We can go the way of bitterness and resentment, which leads to discontentment and unfulfillment and unhappiness, or we can go the way of gratitude and thankfulness, which leads to the very opposite. I can also choose to compare myself with the 5% across the globe and throughout history who have had it better than me, or I can choose to compare myself with the 95% who have had it much worse. My outlook, my perspective, my path is a choice. But one of these choices leads to the good life, and one does not. Speaking of choices, our decisions play a huge role in this discussion. We often have this understanding, which is also a choice, that things in life just happen to us, instead of acknowledging that our plight or our lot in life is also based on our personal decisions. We have a way of minimizing the role of personal responsibility in all of this. I can only speak for myself and use myself as an example here. For instance, I didn't necessarily have to work in kitchens most of my life. I could have chosen to find a different type of work, but I didn't. I could have been more aggressive in pursuing scholarship opportunities while in school, but I wasn't. No one forced me to major in subjects that don't typically yield much money in the professional world. I did it on my own accord. Our decisions matter. Our choices have consequences. much of my plight or my lot in life is based on personal decisions that I made. Decisions that have natural consequences. Decisions that I have to live with. Now, this is a little bit different for everyone, which is why I can really only talk about myself. But I do think that there are some applicable principles here that apply to all people, to one degree or another, and in one way or another. At the end of the day, I can't help but feel, truly and honestly, that I am immensely blessed. Even though I'm not in the upper class or wealthy by American standards, I can't shake this feeling of gratitude and thankfulness. Much of this is due to perspective. I do try to approach life with a global and historical understanding. I do also think that I have a pretty realistic view of the world around me and of my personal plight or lot in life. Some of this understanding comes from personal experience, but most of it comes from reading. This is where that old adage, knowledge is power, comes into play. Knowledge informs my perspective, and my perspective informs my sense of fulfillment, happiness, and gratitude. Even though I'm far from rich or wealthy by contemporary American standards. Now, I'm not saying that I don't ever feel envious or experience bitterness. I certainly do. I mean, as I talked about my employment history a few minutes ago, I was getting a little bitter. I'm also not saying that we should always be content with our present circumstances and never feel like we should deserve anything better or should aspire to be anything greater. I'm definitely not trying to preach a message intended to keep people down, to keep the subservient subservient, and the oppressed oppressed, and the underprivileged underprivileged, and the dehumanized dehumanized. Trying to convince the impoverished to be happy and content with their poverty, ever passive, ever quiet, ever gullible, and in a state of denial. The reality is that this podcast isn't for the truly impoverished and underprivileged. For such people, probably don't have the time nor the privilege to listen to a podcast like this. Instead, this podcast is for the lower middle class to upper class people who probably make up the bulk of the thinker-sensitive audience. But I'm not saying that I'm always happy and fulfilled, and that I somehow never feel sorry for myself. I'm not saying that at all. But what I would say is this. When I'm caught in a state of feeling sorry for myself, it's not that difficult to quickly step back and become aware of how good I actually have it, and to remember how blessed I truly am. The type of gratitude that I'm talking about is a means to generosity. The one who understands how blessed she is usually the one who pays it forward and gives back. The one who lives in a state of thankfulness is often the one who seeks to bless others. Generosity is an outworking of genuine gratitude. We actually see this very thing in some of the poorest regions of the United States, in the much maligned Deep South, and in the Bible Belt. These are some of the most generous people, not only in the Union, but in the world. If you don't believe me, look up the national giving statistics for yourself. This is public information. You will find that the South, home to some of the poorest people in America, people who live in states like Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, significantly outgive their northern, northwestern, and western counterparts. I absolutely believe that perspective plays a huge role in this. It is not surprising to me that people who still tend to view their country as a land of opportunity, people who still seem to mostly view their condition in 21st century America as a blessing, and people who live their lives with a sense of gratitude, whether because of unique religious, political, or cultural understandings, or all of the above, are more generous than others, giving far more to charities, nonprofits, and humanitarian organizations than their counterparts do. The one who is grateful will naturally give more than the one who is ungrateful. The one who sees himself as blessed will give more than the one who sees herself as cursed. The one who lives in a sense of gratitude will be more generous than the one who lives in bitterness. One of the excerpts that I read last episode was from an article that was lamenting the growing unpopularity of giving to other countries. The author of that article, a PhD candidate in political science at Yale University, directly connected this negative trajectory to the exaggerated dreariness, cynical outlook, and pessimistic perspective that I've been critiquing in this three-part podcast. The author of that article understands that there is a causal relationship between misperceiving comparative affluence, that is, not recognizing how good we have it in America, and failing to give to the impoverished of other nations. Exaggerating poverty levels in the U.S. and failing to recognize one's own blessing and privilege as a citizen of the United States lead to the diminishing of foreign aid. This is one of the reasons why possessing a realistic view of the United States, of poverty levels in America, and of one's own position and lot in life is so important. Thanks so much for listening. This episode and all episodes of Thinker Sensitive are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinker Sensitive.